security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-866-938-6611. $99 installation charge. 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now. 1-866-938-6611. That's 1-866-938-6611.
Time now is 11 o'clock. You're in tune to 1480 AM We Act Radio. It's time now for our Live Wire local programming. And today is the world today, the world news today. Okay, so you stand by. And tonight, We Act Radio will broadcast live from the Festival Center on in Adams Morgan, a program about the Cuban Five. You'll be hearing more about that as the day progresses. So keep your dial locked right here at 1480 AM We Act Radio.
The other day, howling and ready to burn that man. The way that I live, no concern that man. We don't have to settle this another way. A letter from the government. The other day, howling and ready to burn that man. The way that I live. Don't concern that, man. We gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us.
Good morning. You're listening to Your World News here on 1480 AM, WPWC, Washington's Progressive Working Class, WEAC Radio. With me today is my co-host, Solomon Kamishong. Solomon, how you doing?
Pretty good. How you doing, Naveed?
I'm hanging in there, man. I'm hanging in there. I'm operating on a little sleep, but lots of caffeine as usual, so I'm all set and ready to go. I understand also that we have a special guest today, Obi Agbuna. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent, excellent. So let's get right into it. We're sort of continuing along the same theme that we had last week on the show, which is Cuba. Mm-hmm. And it works out great since this is an action week, this whole week, mm-hmm. Dealing with the Cuban Five. Yeah. So, Obi, can you tell us a little bit about the Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association, about your involvement in it, and also about the historical connection between the two nations, between Cuba and Zimbabwe?
Most definitely. Well, first of all, let me just thank you for having me on this morning, and I hope that this interview meets the satisfaction of the listeners and those of you who extended the invitation to me. That's an excellent way for me to start. The Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association represents a bond that was established between the two countries going back to when Zimbabwe was fighting in the Second Chimurenga. Chimurenga meaning revolution in the colonial language imposed on them by their former colonial master, Britain, English, meaning revolution. But Chimurenga in their indigenous language, Shona, means English for the listeners who don't know that. What happened was during their independence struggle, you had two liberation movements, the Zimbabwe African National Union and the Zimbabwe African People's Union, that formed a patriotic united front to liberate themselves from colonial Rhodesia. Then, having the second most powerful assembled colonial army on the African continent, and Cuba started training ZAPU, Zimbabwe African People's Union, led by the late vice president of Zimbabwe and national hero, Joshua Nkomo. But then after independence, a few years into independence, Comandante Fidel Castro visited Zimbabwe and made a pledge to help with the training of the teachers. Thousands of Zimbabwean teachers went to the Island of Youth in Cuba and began training to set up the foundation for the educational infrastructure in Zimbabwe. And that is why today Zimbabwe has a 97% literacy rate, the highest in all of Africa. And the first high school for Africans was built in a place called Gurumunzi only 8 years before Brown versus the Board of Education decision in 1946. So you see, we know of Cuba's role in fighting side by side with our comrades in Angola for 14 years in Cuito Puneable, fighting by side with Samora Machel and Frelimo in Mozambique, fighting with Amilcar Cabral and the Party of the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde, but we do not know about the role they played, many people don't, in laying the foundation for the educational infrastructure of Zimbabwe, where they have the highest literacy rate today. And President Robert Mugabe is the second recipient of the Jose Marti Award, Cuba's highest honor. Thomas Sankara was the first to receive it in 1984. President Mugabe received it in 1985. And then in 1990, of course, Nelson Mandela received it. And that was the most decorated. He was the most decorated recipient because he had just come out 27 years from prison. So that is the connection between the two. I was asked to join that organization when Cosme Torres Espinoza, the Cuban ambassador to Zimbabwe, before he had that title, he was the highest-ranking Cuban diplomat to be deported from the United States by the U.S. government in 2003 under false charges of espionage. So when he found out that I was coming to Zimbabwe to do some work on the ground in Zimbabwe, he insisted that I join the Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association, since by that time I was an eight-year veteran of Cuba solidarity work in the African community based in the United States.
Thank you so much, Obi, for that. And you know, first and foremost, you know, folks should know that Obi, you know, have for a long time has served as a U.S. correspondent to the Herald, which is Zimbabwe's national newspaper. And for years now, Obi, your articles have been read throughout the world and most importantly, throughout the African diaspora, including yourworldnews.org, where you're a frequent blogger there.
Yes.
Obi, a lot of folks have come to knowing you around because they don't know you as comprehensively as I do, to know you specifically as a man who works on issues of Zimbabwe. But the truth is, you've been working on issues in terms of defending Cuba's sovereignty for longer, much longer than you have been working on issues surrounding protecting the sovereignty of Zimbabwe. Mm. Can you explain some of the highlights and contributions you've given to our comrades in the good people of Cuba?
Oh, no question about it. Well, first of all, of course, we know that Cuba's our home away from home, and we are obligated to do everything we can to defend Cuba's sovereignty. Now, my first start was in 1995, immediately after the Million Man March. I was introduced to Jose Ponce, who at the time was the first secretary of the Cuban Intersection. For those who don't know, when you don't have normalized relations with a country, instead of having an embassy in that country, you can have an intersection, which does the same thing that an embassy does, serving as an information and networking outlet for your country and people who are interested in doing work for your country. So that's when I was a member of the Pan-African Student Youth Movement, and we were introduced to our brother, Jose Ponce, who was deported also from the United States. And what ended up happening is after that, there are some things I've definitely had the honor of helping do. In 2005, one of them was two poetry slams, and the poetry slams were poetical tributes to Cuba. One took place on July 26th in 2005, and then the other one took place on October 8th, 2005, and that one commemorated the assassination of Ernesto Che Guevara, who was assassinated by the CIA in Bolivia on October 8, 1967, 2 years to the day before I was born. Also, in 2005, I had the honor of helping Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ through their African ministerial correspondent, Sister Majani Deli, at the behest of their senior pastor, Reverend Graylin Ellis Hegler. They had a prayer breakfast about Cuba. In addition to that, so you have those three activities right there. And, of course, I just finished writing the play. I represented Cuba because ever since 2003, the Cuban diplomats cannot go outside the beltway of Washington, D.C., even at invitation, even though there's some efforts now being made to try to rectify that. But I was asked by the Cuban Intersection to represent them at the United Methodist Church's conference in 2004, where every year they pick an international country that they're going to discuss, and they selected Cuba. They also selected me to debate Ambassador Dennis Hayes when he was the spokesperson of the Cuban American National Foundation, which was created in 1981 in that, and they engineer the terrorist cells in Miami that is responsible for a significant majority of the 638 assassination attempts on the life of Fidel Castro. So I debated Ambassador Dennis Hayes of Bowie State University. I, along with M1 from the internationally acclaimed hip-hop group Dead Prez, the city councilman in New York, Charles Barron, had a press conference on the stairs of New York City Hall in 2005, campaigning for Cuban medical personnel to come to New York City and to Washington, D.C. This was shortly after D.C. General Hospital was closed down. So I was able to play a part in doing that. And that's just a summary, real quick, of some of the things that I've been able to do in connection with Cuba. And the last thing was I wanted to mention, because I think that's important, especially with this week being in play. When the Cuban Five case was heard at the Atlanta Circuit Court of Appeals, the last time the Cuban intersection diplomats were allowed to travel outside of the borders of D.C., outside of the Beltway, as mentioned earlier, I took the then deputy ambassador to the Cuban intersection, Cosme Espinosa, the first secretary of the Cuban intersection at that time, Fernando Garcia Belsa. I escorted them to Atlanta for 4 days of activities. They spoke to the concerned black clergy of Atlanta. They spoke at four churches. They had audience with the mayor of Atlanta at the time, Shirley Franklin. And those were just some activities they had. And I am also one of the advisors to an organization that was created in Cuba a couple of years ago called the OAD, the Organization of African Doctors, which was established by the son of the famous freedom fighter, Willie Ricks, as people know him through SNCC, but goes by his African name today, Mukasa Dada, who his son created that organization when he got to Cuba as one of the recipients of the scholarship program to study Cuba at the Latin American School of Medical Sciences. So I'm one of the advisors to that organization. So in a nutshell, those are just some of the things that I've done in relationship to Cuba since 1995.
Salman mentioned some of the outlets that you've written for, and I've also read your stuff on Daily Censored and Black Agenda Report.
Oh, wow.
And some other sites out there. So, yeah, I mean, pretty prolific, and also your essays get picked up by a lot of web outlets.
Thank you.
So, yeah, really good stuff. I wanted to ask you about a play that you wrote recently, a children's play, dealing with Cuba's doctors. Probably its greatest, I would say its greatest gift to the world. A lot of other countries, you know, deliver presents and gifts to the rest of the world in the form of missionaries, mercenaries, missiles, money in the wrong hands. But Cuba actually does some good when they go out and abroad. So I want to ask you about your motivation for writing this play. And I know I know for sure that it was the Roots Charter School, that school that's right on Kennedy Street, right, a couple of blocks like west of North Capitol. Just talk about, you know, what motivated you to write it, who it's dedicated to, a little bit about what it's about.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I mean, yes, it's I wrote the play earlier this year, and it was put on at Roots in February of this year. And tomorrow it's the closing event at the Bolivarian Salon of the Embassy of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela at 2443 Massachusetts Avenue tomorrow at 4 p.m. So for people who want to come out. The play is dedicated to the Cuban Five, but it's not only dedicated to the Cuban Five, it is also dedicated to one of the most unsung freedom fighters. That's an African warrior who is no longer with us, who was very dedicated to Cuba, named Eugene Godfrey, who for many years had a show on Radio Havana. And Eugene Godfrey's work in Havana as a journalist, in Cuba, as a journalist, as a freedom fighter, as a Pan-Africanist, as an internationalist, helped inspire me to go to Zimbabwe and do the work that I did. Because so often you have this... there's a tactic that has become a principle, it appears. I call it splash delegations, where you have people who will travel to a country Africans out of the U.S., they'll be treated like a head of state by the people in that country, not only by the leadership in that country, but the everyday people. Just a very intense level of jubilation to see them there doing something practical to establish and maintain links. But then when they come back to this country, 2 months after they've come back, you forget what they went for, and they hardly follow up on any of the bold promises and proclamations they make to the people and leadership of these countries. So when you take a look at what Eugene Godfrey did in Cuba, he took the same approach to working in Cuba that Frantz Fanon took to working in Algeria, that Kwame Ture and Shirley Graham Du Bois took to working in Guinea, that Julian Mayfield took to working in Ghana. So he was a model for me to follow. So the play is dedicated to him and the Cuban Five. But before we even deal with the doctors, the play shows some of the key historical figures in our community and the special ties that they have to Cuba. Because as much as we love Fidel Castro and as much as we love Che Guevara, they are not our exclusive points of reference to the Cuban Revolution. Mm-hmm. We can go back to Antonio Maceo, General Antonio Maceo, who Marcus Garvey named one of the Black Star Line ships after, who was the planner of the armed insurrection against Spanish colonialism in the Spanish during the Spanish-American War from 1868 to 1890. So we can start with Antonio Maceo. We can focus on Nicolas Guillen, who was given the right by Fidel Castro to return to Cuba after the Batista regime had a ban on him, preventing him from re-entering Cuba. He was given the position of being the point of the revolution, and he was commonly referred to as the Langston Hughes of Cuba. Kwame Nkrumah can be a point of reference because he's the first head of state to recognize the Cuban Revolution in 1959. Amilcar Cabral can be a point of reference because of the relationship he established with Fidel and Che when Guinea-Bissau was fighting to be liberated from Portuguese colonialism. Assata Shakur, safe and sound in Cuba today, is definitely a point of reference. Nehande Obiodun, safe and sound in Cuba, is a point of reference. So we have the children playing some of these people. And we recently added Josephine Baker to the list because many people do not know that in 1966, Josephine Baker went to Cuba to perform at the personal invitation of Comandante Fidel. So that's how the play begins. Then we get into the Cuban doctors. We expose what they're doing in Africa, where they have 4,000 doctors today. We expose what they're doing in Haiti, where they have 500 doctors permanently stationed in Haiti. As a matter of fact, to quote a doctor, but when he was a medical student studying in Cuba, I met him there named Jean-Luc Compré. And he said when people ask him to compare the United States to Cuba, Cuba sends their best doctors to Haiti. The United States sends their best killers to Haiti. Mm-hmm. The U.S. comes to take life in Haiti. Mm-hmm. Cuba comes there to save life. So we focus on their work in the Pacific Islands, their work in the Caribbean, and their work throughout Africa. But before we got into that, we felt it was of paramount importance to, on a pan-African scale, give the Africans who did everything they could to make sure that we honored, respected, and did everything that history obligates us to do to maintain links to Cuba and do nothing to compromise the integrity of Cuba. Excellent. So that's what the play focuses on. Once again, it begins with some of these historical figures, and then it ends by focusing on the doctors. There's a poem I wrote that's part of the play, and they will be a cultural performance. So I urge everybody to come tomorrow as the final activity of this week with the Cuba Five, to come to the Bolivarian Salon at the Embassy of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela at 2443 Mass Avenue Northwest tomorrow at 4 o'clock. But it's not only the kids from Roots Public Charter School. It's a brilliant and special group of kids from a homeschool initiative called the Sankofa Homeschool Community, where I teach African history every Friday at Deanwood Recreational Center. Those kids are part of the play, too. So you get a chance to see the genius of two sets of African children showing you why they feel Africa's our home, but Cuba's our home away from home.
Excellent. We'll be right back. We need to go to a quick commercial break, but we'll be back in just 2 minutes right here on 1480 AM WEAC Radio, WPWC. You're listening to Your World News.
You're listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
Take Action News with David Schuster, Saturdays from 12 to 3 on We Act Radio, 1480 AM, and weactradio.com.
Well, for me, it's always been, you know, you report the facts. You report like hell, let the chips fall where they may. And the truth ultimately is what's going to sort of help our society and help all of us. I don't think progressives want a thumb on the scale on the facts. They just want the facts out there. You let the facts out, and progressives will tell you, you know, we're going to win 70% of the time. You may quibble with the percentages or whatnot, but I think that's just sort of what progressives are looking for, and I think that's where this all sort of meshes with my interest as a journalist. My interest as a journalist is report the facts. Here's what's going on. Here's what the facts say. Here's what history says. Here are the lessons we know we have learned. And let people draw their own conclusions. And I think what's so unfortunate right now in the world of broadcast media is I do think that a lot of conservative radio, certainly conservative television, they're not interested in facts. And that's ultimately where I think conservative media is going to have its downfall, that Americans are hungry. They're just hungry for basic information, hungry for basic facts. You report like hell, you let the chips fall where they may. I think it's natural for all of us who care, who are passionate about politics, who feel like we have a sense about the difference between right and wrong. I think it's okay to let that be part of your cover. It's important for all of us as broadcasters and journalists. In this day and age, we have to be authentic. You can't be the person who's up in the ivory tower that comes down and tells people, now you must eat your peas. No, it's all about, we all have personalities, and I think it's being aware sometimes of our own bias, but also being open to the idea that sometimes we're wrong. But we have a dialogue, and we have a passionate dialogue, and we care about this country, we care about this community, and I think that sort of passion is what carries us through.
Hear more from David Schuster, Saturdays from 12 to 3 on Take Action News, on We Act Radio, 1480 AM, and weactradio.com.
You're listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
And we're back with Your World News here on WEAC Radio, 1480 AM, WPWC, Washington's Progressive Working Class. With me today is my co-host Solomon Kamishong and our special guest, Obi Egbuna. My name is Naveed Nasser. Solomon, do you have a question for Obi?
Yeah, I most certainly do. This is a question I've been waiting to ask you for a while, Obi. I guess a while being about a week now. Recently, Cuba has been in the news because of the Ozzy Guillen situation in which he expressed adoration and respect for Fidel Castro. Can you weigh in on this situation from your perspective, but also can you please provide some comprehensive historical background for our listeners and discuss how that's going to be elucidated within the article that I believe you're working on now?
Yeah, first of all, let me just say that you're a tough act to follow. The article that you wrote on Your World News is incredible.
Appreciate it.
And I urge everybody to go to Your World News and read your article. It was a sensational piece.
Thank you.
I just hope that I can compliment it.
I know you will, for sure.
But in terms of the...
That's yourworldnews.org.
Yeah, yourworldnews.org. Mm-hmm. And in terms of what we're discussing, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, well, first of all, I appreciated, let me explain what I mean by this, because we know while English is the most simple colonial language out of the six that have been imposed on African people, it seems to be the most difficult to understand, even though it's the easiest to learn, because so many things sound alike. So let me just say that I appreciate Ozzy Guillen's apology. But what I mean by that is I appreciate his apology because he had no business saying that he admires and loves Fidel Castro if he doesn't mean it. Mm-hmm. Those Africans who love Fidel Castro, admire Fidel Castro, will die for Fidel Castro. We don't play when it comes to that. If you don't love Fidel, you have no business saying you love Fidel. If you're going to let a bunch of cowards in Miami, a bunch of terrorists in Miami, make you eat your words, make you bite your tongue, you had no business saying it in the first place. Fidel Castro is our favorite American president. And when we mean America, we mean the Western Hemisphere. We don't accept the fascist definition of the Democrats and Republicans who consistently proclaim that they are America. It's a statement that's so fascist, so backwards, that it would make Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler envious. They're probably somewhere smiling right now every time the United States proclaims to be America. That's the first thing. And when we say that Fidel Castro's our favorite American president, we don't bite our tongue on that. If we're talking to our parents, that means, yeah, take down the pictures of JFK and LBJ in your living room and put up pictures of Fidel. If we're talking to our grandparents, we're saying, hell yeah, we mean it, so take that picture of FDR down and put up the picture of Fidel. And yes, for everybody who after November 2008 considers Barack Obama's election to the U.S. presidency the equivalent to what Christians would consider the return of Jesus, when and if he ever comes back, we say, yeah, take down the pictures of him, take down the pictures of Michelle, take down the pictures of Sasha and Malia, and put up pictures of Fidel. Because if you combine the work of Roosevelt, you combine the work of Kennedy, the work of Johnson, and the work of Clinton, and the work of Obama, in the list. Because if Africans were allowed to construct their Mount Rushmore of white liberals, it would be Roosevelt, it would be Kennedy, it would be Clinton, and it would be Carter. Oh. And we know that already. So we're saying to everybody who has that sweet tooth for white liberals, for everybody who sees themselves as a Democrat first and a Judeo-Christian second and an African a distant, distant third, we say shake the cobwebs off. Fidel Castro is our favorite American president, and Ozzie Guillen should not have apologized if he didn't mean to say that in the first place. We don't play that. And you say you love Fidel, when you say you embrace Fidel, you don't take that back. You stand like Nelson Mandela did when Ted Koppel asked him that question. You stand like Kwame Ture did when he was the national chair of SNCC and went to Cuba for the Organization of Latin American Solidarity Conference. You stand like Malcolm X did when he met Fidel Castro at the Hotel Teresa. You stand like every African has stood when questioned about why they love Fidel, our favorite American president. So in terms of the Ozzie Guillen piece, it was beautiful because it exposed that the Cubans in Miami are fading. They're on the ropes. They're in trouble as a terrorist network. If this was 1983, Ozzie Guillen wouldn't be allowed to coach Little League or Boys Club baseball in the United States after making a statement like that. But all he got is a 5-game suspension. They're weaker than ever before. Remember in 1983, for those of you who are boxing fans, they were able to manipulate the fight between Alexis Arguello and Aaron Pryor at the Orange Bowl, which is in the heart of what they call Little Havana. And they were able to turn that event into an anti-Cuba, anti-Sandinista event. Because Alexis Arguello, who early in his career used to come to the ring with the Sandinista flag, ended up fighting with the Contras, on the side of the Contras, against the Sandinistas. So Ozzie Guillen being, and then if Jorge Moscoso is a corpse today, they no longer have him. He who was on the board of the directors of United Way, Jorge Moscoso, who orchestrated the terrorist cell of the Cuban-American National Foundation, got Ronald Reagan to be their keynote speaker. The juice they used to have, the muscle they used to have, they're even responsible for the 1932 gangster movie cult classic Scarface, produced by Howard Hughes, being reinvented to give glory to the Gusanos in Cuba, where Al Pacino played Tony Montana. And that movie, the whole focus of that movie was to show that Jimmy Carter was an idiot and he let Fidel Castro con him into bringing 125,000 Cubans coming out of mental health facilities in Cuba and prisons in Cuba to come to Miami. And that Carter was an idiot. Carter was a fool. And they were angry at Carter for establishing the Cuban intersection in D.C. at the same time the U.S. intersection was established in Cuba. So people have to understand the history. And at the same time, they were hoping that this Ozzie Guillen situation would take away attention from the Cuba Five, which now even has Amnesty International talking about the Cuban Five, has Danny Glover talking about the Cuban Five, people who have been in the periphery of the Cuban issue talking about the Cuban Five. So, and then this is the 50th anniversary of the blockade, and this is the 51st anniversary of the failed Bay of Pigs invasion, where many of the people who supported the Bay of Pigs invasion, called the Peter Pan generation, the first people to defect from Cuba, they are now calling for the lifting of the blockade inside of Miami. The Pope only went there as a gesture of good faith to meet with them, but he still went to Cuba and called for the lifting of the blockade. So they're a fading outfit. They're a terrorist outfit. The only thing they've got to cling on to is that slimy war criminal, Luis Posada Carriles, and Orlando Dr. Death Bosch. So since they haven't been brought to justice for the countless atrocities they've committed against Cuba in a military form, and while people focus on the fact that at 8:03 Tayvon Martin was shot, those who focus on 7:01 p.m. when Martin Luther King was shot in April, we need to focus on the number 638. I'm not saying go and play it for a lottery number, but 638, because those have been the assassination attempts on Fidel Castro by the United States government and the CIA. So as we mourn Thomas Sankara and celebrate him on the 25th anniversary of his assassination, as we focus on the 40th anniversary of Nkrumah passing away, and we know what the CIA did to dispose of his government in Ghana, and we go down the list of all of the comrades and African freedom fighters they've assassinated, we rejoice every time we think of that number 638, because that terrorist network in Miami, the Miami Mafia, every time they've tried to assassinate Fidel Castro, they have come up short. Mm. So when we look at how weak they are, they can go ahead and parade Ozzie Guillen. We know that he's loud at press conferences dealing with baseball, but when it comes to politics, he's a coward. Mm-hmm. He took his trophy that he got from the Chicago White Sox and took pictures with Chavez and then came back and said, never in a million years would I vote for him. But they must understand why he said that. Ozzie Guillen could have relatives and best friends mm-hmm. who got their eyesight back because Cuban doctors are involved in a project in Venezuela called Operation Miracle, which has restored eyesight to thousands of people who were facing permanent blindness. Matter of fact, Stevie Wonder needs to go to Cuba to see if they can restore his eyesight, and not even worry if he offends Obama or not. And the thing about that is, or Ozzie Guillen, he could be related to Nicholas Guillen, who I mentioned earlier. So he's got many reasons to respect Cuba. He's got many reasons to admire Cuba, but the only mistake he made is you don't apologize for saying you love Fidel Castro, because that's something that you should never take back once you say it, because history supports the statement. And as Fidel said when he was on trial in 1953, history has absolved him. And Fidel Castro is a hero in every corner of the world, and he has more respect in every corner of the world than all the U.S. presidents combined, each and every last of those war criminals. Because if you become a president of the United States, by the time you leave 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, you will be a full-fledged war criminal.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And all they wanted to do was divert attention away from the blockade. And we say in Spanish, for the Spanish-speaking Africans in this hemisphere, Cuba sí, bloqueo no. And for Africans who speak colonial English, Cuba yes, blockade no. Because if they want to talk about terrorism, that blockade against Cuba, which was initiated by Kennedy in 1962, is nothing but diplomatic terrorism, the same diplomatic terrorism that is responsible for 2 million people dying in Iraq, 500,000 children, the same type of sanctioning that is responsible for the death and suffering of millions of people in Zimbabwe, as the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001 enters its 11th year. But we have let that blockade against Cuba go on for too long. And if everyone else wants to be casual about Cuba, Africans cannot be. If white liberals want to be casual about Cuba, that's their prerogative. If people who see themselves as Democrats first want to be casual about this, that's their prerogative. And as a matter of fact, representing a community that votes 95% Democrat, this is one of the blemishes and scars on John F. Kennedy's record, in addition to looking the other way and letting his brother give J. Edgar Hoover the okay to bug Martin Luther King's phones. So all of you Kennedy lovers out there, you should be in the streets calling for the lifting of this blockade. Right next minute, right this second. And lifting the blockade is connected to what the Cuba Five is all about, because they came here as patriots to deal with the terrorism and the terrorist cells in Miami. And in this era of homeland security, they give you a true definition of what a patriot is, because too many of us in this country let our patriotism be dictated by our birth certificates and our passport and not our history and our culture. Because if we let our patriotism be determined by our history and culture, we wouldn't have so many artists singing the Star Spangled Banner like it's the last time they're ever going to sing a song.
Right. Well, we need to go to a quick break right now. We'll be right back in 2 minutes right here on WPWC WEAC Radio 1480 AM.
You're listening to WPWC WEAC Radio 1480 AM, WEACradio.com.
Hi, I'm Curtis. And I'm so glad that I've got my own, you know, so glad that I can see. I've got a natural hide. The man can't put no thing on me, and he can't put no thing on you either. Keep your nose clean. Don't be no junkie. Remember, Freddy's dead.
Over 13 million people are affected by famine, war, and drought in the Horn of Africa. Unfortunately, just listening to this commercial won't help them. Just listening won't give them their next meal, or shelter, or hope. You can help by texting GIVE to 777-444 to donate $10, and by going to usaid.gov/FWD to forward the facts. Brought to you by the Ad Council and USAID. Text donations go directly to Consortium of Humanitarian Relief Organizations. Standard text and data rates apply.
Our lives are affected every day by innovations from the minds of African Americans. Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Over 13 million people are affected by famine, war, and drought in the Horn of Africa. Text GIVE to 777-444 to donate $10. Brought to you by the Ad Council and USAID. Text donations go directly to Consortium of Humanitarian Relief Organizations. Standard text and data rates apply.
Joe Perry
and Steven Tyler of Aerosmith for Red. You know, it's okay to rock and roll and party down. Just don't get in that 2,000-pound bullet when you're done and cocked. And please don't drink and drive.
I'm the one that jaded you.
A reminder that friends don't let friends drive drunk. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council, U.S. Department of Transportation, National Association of Broadcasters, and RAD.
You're listening to WPWC WEAC Radio, 1480 AM, WEACradio.com.
And we're back with your world news here on 1480 AM WEAC Radio, WPWC. My name is Naveed Nasser. With me is my co-host Solomon Kamishong and our special guest for today, Obi Egbuna of the American Zimbabwe Friendship Association.
Zimbabwe Cuba.
I say American. Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know.
Christ, my mind. I've been poisoned mentally. I feel the need to apologize.
I was going
to
correct you. Don't worry about that.
But what I wanted to talk to you about, Obi, you were talking about it a little bit before we went to the break, but the blockade,
yes,
that was imposed on Cuba, and it was Kennedy that originally imposed that blockade.
1962, 50 years ago.
Right. So can you tell us a little bit about that? About also a little bit about the case of the Cuban Five themselves. Just about.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, basically, I know NetFit did an excellent job last week. Mm-hmm. It deals with high-level diplomatic engagement between the government of Cuba and the government of the United States. The government of the United States knew that since the 1980s that a lot of the terrorist activity at Cuba to provoke Cuba was coming out of Miami. So they provided evidence of the activity of Posada Carriers, the activity, because the Cuban American National Foundation pretended to be a diplomatic organization, but the whole time they had a armed outfit. Then you have Alpha 66. You had Radio Marti established. And Jorge Mascanosa, who was the founder of the Cuban American National Foundation, was a special advisor to President Reagan on how to construct Radio Marti. So you had all this aggression aimed towards Cuba. So when the FBI ignored them, when the National Security Council ignored them, they had to take a measure and penetrate these cells to expose their activity. So once it was discovered that this was done, they arrested these five patriots who did this because of patriotism to their nation. They were sick and tired of hearing Fidel Castro talk about assassination attempts on his life, 638, and how Cuba was compromised. And this is in the context of the blockade. And we have to remember that, and then this is something that relates directly to Africans, because one of the people that's on the State Department's list of terrorists is Assad Shakur, who has been safe in Cuba since 1979. And the Black Caucus earlier this century endorsed the extradition of Assad Shakur. But then when they were confronted by activists at the grassroots level in our community, the only answer they could give us is they didn't know the difference between Joanne Chesimard, her slave name, and Assad Shakur, the name that she's taken on. So our response was, we wouldn't care if you didn't know her, she was Joanne Chesimard. If you know your history like you claimed you should know that she was in the New York chapter of the Black Panther Party. And you should know the rich history between Africans and Cuba. But that's what happens when you look at yourself as a Democrat first, and you believe in integration and not penetration. We should penetrate all these outlets to magnify the contradictions in all of them, not get so consumed by their agenda that we forget our purpose for being in these capacities in the first place. This would have never happened if they followed the dictum of Adam Clayton Powell Jr., the greatest and boldest African congressman we've had out of the 123 we've had in 500 years. So I think that this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with aggression against the Cuban people, and this is why. And since Cuba is 60% African, and we're talking about a country that has the lowest HIV/AIDS rate in the world, the lowest infant mortality rate in the world, the most advanced gerontology program in the Americas, for people who don't know what gerontology is, that's treatment for the elderly. And since Africans are 60% of that country, those Africans have been enjoying free education, but the best in the world, because they have the highest literacy rate in the world, the best education in the world free of charge, the best health care in the world free of charge since 1959. You can technically say the way Africans live in Cuba is as close to reparations as we are at this moment in history, as we are still fighting for reparations all throughout the hemisphere and on the African continent too. Because when you merge the experiences of slavery and colonialism, and then when we take a look at Cuba's contributions to Africa, 4,000 doctors in Africa dispersed throughout Africa right now. Not only providing free health care to people, barefoot doctors, going to the rural areas of different countries. I've watched the 130 doctors stationed in Zimbabwe at work. It's nothing short of awesome. And their living conditions are the size of a dormitory at a university in this country. And they're out there with their backpacks every day in the rural areas treating the people. And then when they're not doing that, they are teaching in the medical schools, encouraging the medical students that are getting the training to stay in their countries and not continue the cycle of the brain drain, where Africa's best doctors, Africa's best nurses, Africa's best physicians, Africa's best health aides work in the United States, work in Britain, and work all throughout Europe, and will never work 1 hour, 1 minute, 1 second in the countries where they were born, so that their people are not the beneficiaries of their talents. So when we focus so much, and I mentioned the brain drain and Cuba's contribution to circumventing the brain drain, because we live in a capitalist society and we focus so much on material resources, but Cuba teaches us that the human resource is the most important resource on the planet, and they tell you to put up or shut up when they send their doctors all over Africa, all over over Haiti. And one of the worst blunders we made was 7 years ago when we put too much focus on Kanye West's statement about George Bush not liking African people, stating the obvious, instead of pulling together to fight for the 1,500 environmental disaster specialists to come to the Gulf region that Fidel offered to send to the United States immediately after Hurricane Katrina. We should have made a human circle and snatched them through customs and dared those drug addicts and alcoholics who work as customs agents to stop us. We should have snatched them right through and took them right to the Gulf and took them right to New Orleans. And at the time they made the gesture, the public hospitals in the Gulf were the two worst in the United States. And remember, they offered to stay there until the health infrastructure was up to par, which means they would have taken the health infrastructure to new unprecedented heights, because both of those public hospitals were on the ropes when Hurricane Katrina took place anyway. And we let that opportunity squander. We focused, we made the irrelevant relevant. And that is because around that time we were focusing, we looked at Bush as the Republican enemy and us being patriotic to the Democratic Party instead of being loyal to Cuba when they were in the capacity to bring a miracle to the Gulf. And they still need to be in the Gulf. They need to be in Washington, D.C. They need to be on Native American reservations. Cuban doctors need to be in prison infirmaries. And as a matter of fact, I'm part of a campaign right now fighting for Cuban doctors to come to Native American reservations, to prison infirmaries, and to hospitals that have communities that have had public hospitals and clinics closed since the 21st century. And we're dedicating that to the work of Booker T. Washington when he had Negro Health Month. We're dedicating that to W.E.B. Du Bois when he wrote The Psyche and Health of the American Negro, one of the most comprehensive journals written on our relationship to health care between chattel slavery and the early 1900s. So Obamacare is not our point of reference when we deal with health. That's one of those issues that shows the lovers' quarrel between Democrats and Republicans, which we shouldn't have anything to do with. They've manipulated our anger and our sentiment for too long. And it's connected to another initiative simultaneously where we're making an appeal to the African Union that at a moment in history where we have 21 million AIDS orphans on the African continent, we would like them to pay for the African Union to pay for the 4,000-member HIV-AIDS brigade that Comandante Fidel, our favorite American president, offered to send to Africa 11 years ago. So that's some unfinished work, and there are a lot of people involved in that initiative with me. One of them I mentioned earlier, my good friend and brother, M1 from the internationally acclaimed hip-hop group Dead Prez. He's a partner with me on that project. But the group that is the driving force on that project is the group I mentioned earlier, the Organization of African Doctors, which Abeku Dada, the son of Mukasa Dada, formerly known as Willie Ricks, field director of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, created once he got to Cuba to work in medical school. So we're pushing that project, and we're going to have that initiative. We're going to have those appeals out. One is going to the African Union, and the other one will be going to the U.S. government. We want to have that ready by African Liberation Day weekend, so that because all of our tributes to Cuba need to be working tributes. Mm-hmm. We don't need to just talk about Cuba. We need to be engaging in creative activity to show that our solidarity with Cuba is not wavering, to show that it is not casual, and to show that it is genuine. Because many people will take an issue like this, and we call it making a whore out of the issue, where you get more recognition for raising an issue than the issue itself. And you know that the issue is a necessity, but you will exploit the issue for individual accolades and recognition, and you are not genuinely committed to seeing the issue all the way to the finish line. And that has become a culture, that has become a pattern in the United States, and we can't make the people who do it stop it because they're morally bankrupt. But what we can do is provide an alternative approach to the work. And that's one of the other motivations that made me want to write the play anyway, because we're tired of people making a whore out of this issue and making a whore out of all the other issues that we know that can take our genuine resistance to new unprecedented heights. But so much confusion is caused by these pimps who pose as activists and pose as frontline fighters who are only seeking to exploit the issue so they can get more photo ops, they can get more speaking engagements, they can write books, and they can pose as though they represent us on the front line, where standing on the front line is the one thing that they will never do in a million years.
Mm-hmm. Well,
right on.
Right.
Oh, I have a question for you, and I want to shift it slightly towards the east, to Zimbabwe. We've talked about this before, that Americans have this idea when they think of lives being lost, you know, especially, you know, women and children, that it, you know, they have this Rambo kind of mentality, the G.I. Joe kind of mentality.
Uh-huh.
Can you talk about the adverse impact that sanctions on Zimbabwe have had on the people on the ground?
And then
the follow-up to that, what can people do,
what can we do
tangibly to help end these sanctions against Zimbabwe?
The same thing that we raise them, intensify them, raise them. First of all, study them to understand the impact. Thank you so much for that question. Don't let the sanctions on Zimbabwe turn 50 years old like we have let the blockade on Cuba do. Get this concept out of your mind that military repression only deals with conventional warfare. Our analysis of military repression and violence resembles the character of a G.I. Joe episode or any other, or Spike Lee's movie Miracle at St. Anna, or any movie celebrating the Tuskegee Airmen, they've been a few, or any of the old school military movies, George C. Scott and Patton, The Dirty Dozen, because we know that Hollywood is known for their military movies. So get that concept out of your mind that is the biggest threat to human life. The ink pen is the number one weapon of mass destruction. You can use sanctions to destroy a country's educational infrastructure, their health infrastructure, their public works infrastructure. For example, in Zimbabwe, in the rural areas, when a woman is pregnant, the strongest men in the community need to get a wheelbarrow and push her to the hospital because there's no ambulatory care. When she gets there, the medicine she would need to ease the pain is not available. When an AIDS patient or malaria patient or cholera patient goes to the hospital, their medicine might not be there. The land that we reclaimed from 4,500 farmers, they may not be agricultural tools to ferment the land and cultivate the land. So it's aimed at sabotaging the agricultural infrastructure. The schools could close down because of different problems, if they're maintenance problems. And the equipment to repair the maintenance problems are not there, because after only 32 years of independence, a lot of the things they need to be gotten outside the country, and they need to be purchased with foreign capital. The economic stability of Africa, even though Southern Africa is the most stable region, after only 32 years of independence, they're not ready yet. So this is a direct initiative to sabotage them, just like even in the case of Cuba, with all the attributes I mentioned, their educational system, their healthcare system, the blockade has cost them $97 billion. $97 billion. Money that could go towards the free healthcare system, money that could go towards the free educational system. They have to pay twice the money for braille equipment for the blind. You have to pay twice the money for machinery for your healthcare system, supplies you need for your schools. It breaks countries down. But it is something that we don't focus on. As a matter of fact, look, everyone talks about it. Iraq is mentioned in the news in the United States every day. Underground media, independent media, and mainstream media. How many times do they focus on sanctions in Iraq? 2 million people died, 500,000 children. And then Madeleine Albright got on 60 Minutes and said, in hindsight, I regret doing it. So because based on her regret, millions of people are in the cemetery. So we have to take a look at the impact of sanctioning when it is done by our former and colonial slave masters. Because ironically, in the case of Zimbabwe, the only other time sanctions were imposed is when the revolution was taking place and a military embargo was imposed on the Smith regime, the Rhodesian regime. So, and by letting these sanctions exist, it sends a statement to the world that Zimbabwe under Robert Mugabe is just as bad as Rhodesia under Ian Smith. Being casual about the blockade on Cuba sends the message that Cuba under Raul Castro and Fidel Castro is just as bad as it was under Batista. Matter of fact, it's saying Batista was better. It's saying that the United States should have annexed Cuba so Cuba could today could be like Texas or be like California, because the first seven presidents of the United States had a top priority agenda was to annex Cuba, which is the worst degrading form of colonialism because you just suck a country up like a vacuum. So failure to deal with the blockade on Cuba, failure to deal with the sanctions on Zimbabwe is saying that diplomatic terrorism is okay. And don't forget that President Obama has renewed the sanctions against Zimbabwe for the last 4 years, wrote a letter to Bush in 2007 when he was a senator on the Foreign Relations Committee and Joe Biden was his boss, that the sanctions shouldn't be lifted until the dark cloud of President Mugabe has been ousted from power. And Barack Obama should stick to debating punch-drunk war veterans like John McCain. He should stick to disciplining members in the U.S. government who will heckle him while he's addressing the nation. Robert Mugabe is way out of Barack Obama's league. He's way out of Joe Biden's league. He's way out of Hillary Clinton's league. He's way out of Michelle Gavin's league. And he is definitely out of that Oreo Johnny Carson's league, the Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, who was trying to show off a couple of years ago and pick a fight with Zimbabwe's ambassador to the United States, Mashivinyika Mapuranga, who told him correctly, "I did not understand fully what a house slave was until you opened your big mouth today."
Mm.
So what with and Obama, when he was campaigning, and he's probably going to speak to the Cuban American National Foundation between now and November to promise them that he is not going to lift the blockade on Cuba. But he isn't going to lift the blockade on Cuba. We're going to lift the blockade on Cuba. Mm-hmm. Obama can't lift sanctions on Zimbabwe. We must lift sanctions on Zimbabwe. And all it means is that Africans in the United States have to make sure that their resistance is in accordance with our resistance all over the world and freedom-loving people all over the world. So if the African continent as a collective has called for the lifting of these sanctions, if the whole international community, over 180 countries, have called for the lifting of the blockade on Cuba, then we should be in accordance with their sentiments, in accordance with their aspirations. We shouldn't be worried about ruffling the feathers of a bunch of dishonest and opportunist white liberals in the Democratic Party or a bunch of extreme fascist and racist in the Republican Party. We should forget the fox and the wolf. Tell the fox you ain't slick enough, and tell the wolf that your fangs no longer have the bite that they used to. We stand on the side of the poor. We stand on the side of the exploited. We stand on the side of the oppressed. That's the statement we need to make, and the best way to make that statement is to call for the lifting of the blockade on Cuba and the lifting of the sanctions on Zimbabwe. And lastly, we need to let those in our community, like Trans Africa Forum, I'm glad Danny Glover is doing everything he's doing for the Cuban Five, but he must eventually answer to why Trans Africa is working with the National Endowment for Democracy to bring about a regime change in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. That takes the concept of strange bedfellows to a whole nother level, because that bed, the sheet of that bed, is stained with a hell of a lot of blood, and he needs to come out and publicly address that. As a matter of fact, I'll impose a challenge on the two of you to make contact with Trans Africa and ask Danny Glover, will he come on this show with me anytime he's ready to discuss why Trans Africa is working with the National Endowment for Democracy and why Trans Africa calls for the lifting of the blockade on Cuba but won't say anything about the sanctions of Zimbabwe. And then we can try to get any of the Congressional Black Caucus members who voted for the sanctions of Zimbabwe to do something about it, because they came 5 votes short of voting unanimously for those sanctions. And none of them voted against the sanctions. Cynthia McKinney, Carolyn Kilpatrick, Corin Brown, Bobby Rush, and the other person who didn't come out against those sanctions. All they did is abstain. 9 white Republicans and 2 white Democrats are the only ones who voted against the sanctions. Not one member of the Congressional Black Caucus voted against the sanctions on Zimbabwe, which once again sends the statement that Zimbabwe under Robert Mugabe is worse than Rhodesia under Ian Smith. And they know that the sanctions were imposed because of the land reclamation issue, an issue that for 20 years they said nothing about. They never pressured Reagan to honor the Lancaster House Agreement. They never pressured Clinton to honor the agreement. They never pressured Bush to honor the agreement. And the Lancaster Agreement still was never going to be honored, and Zimbabwe had to reclaim that land. And the same way, they haven't really been aggressive about the blockade in Cuba. Sure, they take trips to Cuba. Sure, they signed a contract for students to go to Cuba for medical school, but none of them have sent any of the kids from their districts to medical school in Cuba. And Fidel wanted to offer 500 scholarships a year, and 12 years later, the first 500 haven't even been filled. Not even half of them have been filled. And they've been filled by grassroots people. The Congressional Black Caucus never honored that contract that they signed. Well, so I mean that what we have to do, lastly, I know we're wrapping up, is we have to tell people that if you're against the blockade on Cuba, you have to be against the sanctions on Zimbabwe. Right. That's like saying that you're against you were against the Nazi Party and Hitler, but you liked the Fascist Party in Italy. Right. It was like saying that you hated the Ku Klux Klan, but you loved the White Citizens Council. It's like saying you love the FBI, but you hate the CIA, but you love the FBI. It's inconsistent, it's ingenuine, and we need to make sure that our ships are sailing in the direction of all poor and exploited and oppressed people on Earth, especially when we are dealing with a country that is carrying the African continent on its shoulders, right this minute, right this second.
Right. We need to go, but Obi, you mentioned Danny Glover, so I need to mention this really quickly. Danny Glover is actually featured at an event tonight sponsored by Institute for Policy Studies called Obama Give Me 5.
Yeah.
I know I'm going, and WEAC Radio is going to be broadcasting live from there.
Okay.
It's at the Festival Center at 1640 Columbia Road Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can make it down there tonight or not, but if you could, you might be able to ask Danny Glover about...
He knows me very well.
Okay, well then...
He knows me.
I'll be down there and I'll ask the question about Zimbabwe and I'll see what he says. So, but...
Is he willing to come on this show and discuss it?
I'll ask him that,
for
too.
For 1 hour.
I'll ask him that, too. I'll ask him that, too. And real quick before we go, OccupyTheJusticeDepartment.com, April 24th, all out on that day. Free Mumia, free all political prisoners, and end mass incarceration. You've been listening to Your World News. My name is Naveed Nasser. My co-host, Solomon Kamishong, and our special guest today was Obi Igbuna.
Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible.
Hi, this is Chris Hedges, and when I'm in Washington, I don't want my news filtered through corporate sponsors.